Jim Engster. Happy Memorial Day. And coming on Talk Louisiana today, we'll hear from Larry Carter, the president of the Louisiana Federation of Teachers, the state's largest teacher union. He'll comment on teacher pay in Louisiana. What is the attitude of the educators in our state? And also, collective bargaining remains an issue, and we'll discuss that with Larry Carter as well. We'll hear from Dan Bornay, who's not only a former public servant, we remember him as head of the Public Affairs Research Council, head of the Louisiana Chemical Association, but also Dan Bornay, on the 100th anniversary of the birth of former Louisiana Governor John Julian McKithen, and the 200th anniversary of the birth of P.G.T. Beauregard, whose statue came down in New Orleans last year. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us today for the Memorial Day edition of Talk Louisiana. We're live, and if you'd like to make your voice heard on this holiday, 877-217-5757 is our number anywhere. And in Baton Rouge, a local dial is 297-5633. Email is talk@talklouisiana.org. And certainly we salute all the Americans who fought and gave their lives for us to have the privileges that we enjoy as citizens of our country. 877-217-5757. Larry Carter is with us, the president of the Louisiana Federation of Teachers, joining us from New Orleans today. And this is the largest teacher union in our state. And Larry and his staff last week unveiled a survey which indicates where teachers are on certain issues, starting with teacher pay. How's it looking, Larry Carter?
Hey, first, I would like to say, you know, as we celebrate Memorial Day today, LFT salutes all those who sacrificed their lives to protect the freedoms we enjoy, today being that it's Memorial Day. I certainly want to say we did the survey recently, I think, if I'm not mistaken, between April 10 and May 7th. And what we learned from that survey, it showed that teachers, you know, are fed up, you know, not just with low pay, but also with the lack of resources, crumbling infrastructure of school facilities, poor student discipline, and a lack of parental involvement. We definitely see this as a wake-up call for legislators, for school boards, and also for teachers and school employees. I mean, we surveyed almost 4,000 teachers in particular, and it was, you know, a self-reporting survey, and we liked, you know, the fact that instead of us trying to decide what we thought teachers and school employees wanted to do or whether they saw issues the same way as we did, we wanted to do this survey. So we conducted the survey, and we now have the results at this point, and later we'll be having the results broken down by different districts, school districts, so that we can better, you know, assess how in those particular areas teachers and school employees want to respond to the issues that they talked about.
Was there anything in the survey that was a revelation to you?
Not really, but one of the things that I thought was, you know, kind of interesting to me is because there are so many stories currently about mass shootings in schools, I actually thought school safety was going to be a lot higher in the polling that we did, but we found, you know, 53% said salaries, 40% said discipline, 38% said building conditions, 35% said parental involvement, 31% teacher evaluations, and at 29% school safety.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of took me a little bit aback, but I can see in most places where teachers, students, and school employees work, they probably see it a little safer because an incident hadn't happened in their particular school. So, you know, that kind of alarmed because of the national, you know, stories we've been hearing about. But I, you know, can certainly see how in a local community where that hasn't happened yet, that may not be one of the biggest issues out there.
There have been 22 school shootings or attempted school shootings in the United States this year. And, of course, we've had some dramatic episodes of late in which young people have lost their lives at school, and some are calling for teachers to be armed. There was an attempt to address that in the Louisiana legislature, but a bill failed that would have done just that. But another one passed that will permit students to have bulletproof backpacks. What do you make of this bill?
I think that's one of those bills that did get through that, you know, individuals say, look, because arming teachers, we thought, was one of those decisions that could be more detrimental than helpful in school environments, that allowing students to have a backpack that basically could protect them from harm, we really didn't have a problem with that.
It does allow body armor on campuses, but it sailed through both chambers, and the governor of Louisiana has indicated he is supportive, so that will become the law of the state of Louisiana. Your survey indicates teachers are not happy about the way they're being paid in Louisiana, which has now dropped behind the southern regional average. How far behind?
Well, what we found at this point is about $2,000 behind the southern regional average, and probably in between maybe $4,000 to $5,000 behind the national average. And understanding that we do have a state right now that's in a deficit and trying to figure out how to even pay for that, we also asked in our survey different sources of revenue that could be used to do that. So, you know, we're certainly looking at, and teachers certainly understand by looking at the survey, that it's not just a local issue, but it also is a state issue when it comes to funding salaries for teachers and school employees.
With the legislature continuing to have difficulty coming to grips with the budget, is it really practical to envision a teacher pay hike anytime soon?
Well, for us, we think it's very practical when it comes to looking at, in the spring, having a special session, a session that will be strictly geared towards a fiscal session, that there are some tax, you know, measures that teachers and school employees, as well as, you know, we do, look at the tax exemptions for businesses. We look at there's a tax revenue generating source that could be used when it comes to the ITIP, the funding that right now at one point school boards were not given an opportunity to kind of vote on whether or not a particular business received certain tax breaks in a particular local district, and it was called the local industrial tax exemptions, that now school boards can actually decide how to limit, you know, that particular funding, and maybe instead of giving 100% of the tax exemption to a particular business in that particular parish, that they can limit it by certain percentages and use that monies that's captured by the local school board to actually fund pay raises for teachers and school employees.
Now, last time you were on the program, we talked about where teacher pay is, and Keith in Oak Hills asks, what does the average teacher in Louisiana earn now per year?
I know it ranges depending upon the parish you're in, but if you look at the average in Louisiana, we saw it was somewhere between 46, maybe 45 in that range, 45 or 46,000. It, again, depending on how you look at it, skewed the numbers in terms of which parishes you're in, it could be a lot lower or it could be a little higher than that. But the average looks to be somewhere between 46,000 probably to about 47, or even as low as 45 from what we saw.
And you're saying that that's 2,000 below the southern regional average. Well, what, and this I think was addressed some in the survey as well, what options do teachers have to lodge their complaints about this?
Look, that was one of the things that we were trying to measure because of the amount of, you know, again, coverage from walkouts that happens across the country from West Virginia, Oklahoma, Arizona, and Tennessee. We actually polled that question and said they were given a list of options from petitioning the local school boards all the way up to a statewide walkout. And what we found in that was that teachers basically shared that they would rather petition or probably walk out in terms of a state walkout because they felt that they wanted to make sure that those issues were heard by not just the local school boards, but also by the state, you know, lawmakers who actually decide what, you know, they could do to have a significant pay raise. And it showed that 61% answered a statewide walkout and 59% said a mass demonstration or rally at the state capitol in Baton Rouge.
All right, so what's the percentage for a statewide walkout?
Statewide walkout was basically 61%, and 59% say they mass demonstration or rally at the state capitol, and 48% say they local, you know, responded to like a local action at the school board level.
So more than 6 out of 10 state teachers who are members of LFT, the largest teacher union, indicate they would be in favor of a walkout based on the compensation they are currently receiving. What is your stance on collective bargaining?
Well, you know, as a teachers union, and any union would say that collective bargaining is a way to create an equal playing field for the employee as well as the employer when it comes to what happens in a particular school or what happens in a particular workplace. So we're certainly all for collective bargaining.
Where are we going with this? If 61% of the members are saying they're supportive of a walkout, is that a real possibility?
Right now, I think it could be a real possibility. We're actually using a survey over the summer to really start talking to our local leaders as well as teachers and school employees to talk about that, because what we found is that teachers were actually calling us a lot, saying, look, we saw in West Virginia, we saw in Oklahoma, we saw in Arizona, teachers, parents, community members, faith-based community coming together to really talk about this issue around pay, around educational funding like never before. And are we thinking about doing something like that? So that prompted the whole survey conversation for us in our office, and I'm sure other organizations are doing the same, discussions and having the same discussions. So we thought it was to respond to our members and non-members. They was just calling and asking, is Louisiana next? And I can't say that because I'm not going to actually, you know, be in a position to just call a walkout without.
All right, we've got to take a break, but we'll return with Larry Carter on Talk. This is Jim Engster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana on Memorial Day, and hope you are enjoying your holiday and taking time to remember those who gave their lives for us in this country. 877-217-5757 in our remaining time with Larry Carter, and soon we'll hear from Dan Bornay, the voice of the valley, as in Death Valley. But Larry Carter and the LFT have released a survey showing 61% of members favor a walkout if conditions do not improve for teachers, principally teacher pay in Louisiana. Public school teachers now earn about $2,000 less in our state than they do in other states. And again, 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Now, a couple of emails. Who do you blame for this situation? This is from Tracy at the Capitol. Who do you blame? You blame the legislature, the governor, or a combination of factors for this condition right now?
Well, it looks like when we look not just at the survey, but just in conversations in general, they look at both have responsibility to deal with this issue. But in particular, they seem to have a real issue with looking at the governor, who's been very supportive of teachers and school employees and educators around the state, and then you look at the legislators who have to make decisions to not just balance a budget, but also look at prioritizing what the governor put out there as his educational plan or his budgetary plan. And it looks like in every turn that is not being supported by the majority of the legislators in the legislature. So they seem to understand that while the governor supports teachers and school employees, some in the legislature, a majority, don't seem to feel the same way, and they're looking at how to best put pressure on those individuals who don't support what the governor's plan is to support a balanced budget, to support funding for education and services like health care. I think that's what's fueling some of the conversations we're hearing from teachers and school employees around these issues of not just funding but infrastructure, better, school buildings, repairs, for looking at ways to fund a government that can adequately take care of the citizens of the state. So I think it's a combination, but it seems as though it's really directed towards the legislature.
Now, another listener, this is Mac in Hammond, saying that teachers' pay should be reflective of cost of living in their respective states. And in Louisiana, we do have a lower cost of living. Has that been factored in?
I have not heard the cost of living piece factored in as much as I think the particular question is being asked. But I do know that in terms of the cost of living, we do know that that is probably true, that when you look at a state like New York that can pay its teachers between $70,000 and about $80,000 because the standard of living is much higher than Louisiana, and then you look at Louisiana between $45,000 and maybe $50,000 as an average. Certainly the cost of living, I think, is factored in, but I think when we look at just the southern regional average, I think the teachers and school employees deserve way more than even that. I think if I look at Louisiana, and I think I said this on the show before, I think starting salaries for teachers, because they go through schools for 4 years, they're entrusted with our most precious possession, our children, that a starting salary of $60,000 or $75,000 would be certainly adequate, you know, to talk about a true professional salary. So I think cost of living probably is factored in as a, you know, as a discussion, you know, take place, but it's not something that we've heard mm-hmm. people talk about a lot.
That would seem to be something that would be almost impossible to achieve right now, though.
Absolutely.
But you would like that. In your
Absolutely.
Dream world, $60,000 to $75,000 for starting pay for teachers.
That's correct.
Do you think you'll live to see that happen, Larry?
Look, I don't know if I'll live to see it, and depending upon how we look at educational professionals, you know, in the next 10 years, I would be very, very hopeful and to see that happen. And I know there's experimenting going on, like in some boroughs or some. Counties in New York, that they're experimenting through either private funding and also some government funding, where they're looking at how do you attract the best and brightest to the education profession. And their starting salaries in some cases are as high as $95,000 to like $110,000 a year. And they're actually doing that experimentation. It's been going on probably for 8 to 10 years out of some of those counties in New York. And so I'm looking at that. I think people in the education field is looking at, when we talk about brain drain, not just in the state of Louisiana, but in terms of education, we got teachers right now, even when you look at our survey, who said they are strongly considering leaving the profession because of low pay. And that was alarming to me when I saw that, even though I had heard that, you know, to some degree over the years, that there was really some discussions that people take on every single day when they decide, do they stay in the profession or do they leave? And low pay was one of those things that was high on the survey for us as well. And it really speaks to, if we want to keep the best and the brightest in the field, how do we do that? How do we attract them? You know, then how do we retain them? So that's a factor that we've seen that actually caused alarm for us through the survey as well, because we hear about it, but we have certainly seen it show up in this particular survey at this time.
Larry Carter, head of the Louisiana Federation of Teachers, we thank you for joining us today. It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you so much for having me, Jim, as always.
See you soon. Appreciate it. And we're now joined by Dan Bornay, the voice of the Valley, as in Death Valley, and longtime head of the Louisiana Chemical Association, and a broadcaster of note, not only at Death Valley, where he'll begin his 33rd season in a few months, but Dan has a long history working as a journalist, and he's a historian, and he knew Governor John Julian McKithen, who would have been 100 years old if he had lived a life that would continue today. He was born May 18th, 1918, 100 years ago today, in the lovely hamlet of Columbia, Louisiana. He died June 4th, 1999. He was 81 years old when he died. Now, he also died in Columbia, by the way. Before we get to John McKithen and PGT Beauregard, who would have been 200 years old today, think about that. The McKithen and Beauregard born on the same day, 100 years apart. What an irony. How about the LSU baseball Tigers, Dan Bornay? They came within a game of winning the SEC tournament, and they had a long way to go and almost made it to the championship. It was quite a show for Paul Menary's team over the weekend in Hoover, Alabama.
Well, yeah, great. I watched all those games, and just a tremendous effort on the part of the Tigers. It looks like they're peaking at the right time. Their pitching's coming around, and I think he's got them right where he wants them to be and right where they need to be as they open regional play. And we'll find out, I guess, Jim, sometime between 11 and 11:30 this morning as to where the Tigers will go for their regional contest. So.
it'll be interesting to see what happens, considering their strong showing in the SEC. But hats off to Paul Menary and his team for doing an exceptional job over the last few days in Alabama. And how about LeBron James? He's an amazing force of nature, 33 years old, appears to just be getting better and better. Some are calling him the greatest ever. He leads Cleveland to an 87-79 victory over Boston in Game 7 to win the East, and now we'll see whether it's Houston or Golden State to face Cleveland in the finals. But LeBron James may be as good as any player who's ever worn a uniform, Dan Bornay.
Well, he probably is, but, you know, it's hard to compare athletes who played at different times, especially many, many years ago, to athletes playing today. All those comparisons are fun, but they're very hard to make. But it certainly doesn't distract in any way from his accomplishments. My son, Jason, was in Cleveland earlier this year. I've never seen LeBron play in person. He did. He went to a Cavs game, and he watched him from a great seat. And he said, "Dad, you know, Shaq was big, but LeBron is just a huge man. He's just a huge man, can play any position,
and he
commands
can move,
the floor.
And he can move.
And he can move. And, you know, he's not a ball hog. He can pass. He can do it all. And so he's absolutely one of the greatest ever, and he's still playing, you know. And it's amazing how these guys ramp it up when it really counts. Here, both divisional series are going to seven. And we're going to have a heck of a NBA final. I'll tell you, it's going to be great. Great to watch these athletes.
And he never went to college. No college degree. This doesn't seem to have hurt LeBron very much. And, Dan, we'll talk more about what's going on in our world, including the passing of Billy Cannon and the anniversaries of John McKithen and PGT Beauregard. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana on Memorial Day, 877-217-5757. Dan Bornay, the versatile man about town, is with us. And Dan, many years ago, was in a film, Everybody's All-American, which was loosely based on the life of Billy Cannon. And Frank DeFord wrote the book. The book was much different than the movie that Taylor Hackford produced right here in Baton Rouge. But Dennis Quaid actually wore number 20, and Dan was in that film. And Dan Bornay, you had a good time, and I think you're still getting royalty checks.
In fact, Jim, I am. Every so often I get a check from Warner Brothers in the amount of just over a dollar or so. So, yeah, the residuals are just they're rolling in. It was a great, great time. It was we filmed it over the 88-89 seasons, as I recall, and Taylor Hackford was the producer, and of course he had done a director, he had done Officer and a Gentleman, and he's done a lot of great films since. And a guy named Alan Blomquist was his assistant, and he's now become a tremendous producer in Hollywood. Yeah, Dennis Quaid, Jessica Lange, John Goodman, Timothy Hutton, they were the stars, and they hung around Baton Rouge for several months while the film was being finished, and we shot live sequences in Tiger Stadium. We used the half times of two different games, two different seasons, to actually shoot the action footage that you see in the film. And so that's actually shot, most of that footage, where there's grass, there's some shot in the snow that of course wasn't Tiger Stadium, but where there's grass, those were shot in Tiger Stadium with the real crowd in the background. And it was just a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Every now and then, it shows up on, on Turner Network Television or something like that. So
you
it's kind of a
young Dan Bornay in that film. He's obviously getting his residuals for a reason. He's one of the stars. So.
No, not hardly a star. I was the MC at the banquet, and there was a 25-year reunion banquet for the team. And I was the MC at that banquet. We shot that at Boudreaux's there on Government Street here in Baton Rouge. Those of us who are local know what Boudreaux's is. But it took 4 days to shoot that sequence.
Really?
And, yeah, they shot the entire sequence with one camera. They didn't do any cross-shooting, okay? So every take was done with the same camera, and of course you had multiple angles in this banquet scene. And I asked the head of photography, the film guy, I said, why you shoot one camera? He said, well, he said, this camera has a personality, this whole room has a personality, this lighting has personality, and the fake smoke that we put in here, that's got personality. And he said, every foot of this film is going to have the same imprint of this camera on it, and that's why I want to use this one camera for all of these shots. It made sense to me. I guess now with all the digital stuff that's going on, that might not be the case, but it was very interesting to see a movie literally being made in front of your own eyes.
Well, and it stood the test of time. It's not a bad film, and Baton Rouge featured prominently in Everybody's All-American, a film that is 30 years old. But Billy Cannon, at first, was quite concerned about the film, and later he said it was okay. But he is the number 20 that LSU remembers, and the only person who will ever wear number 20 on the LSU football field. The other numbers that have been retired are worn by other players, 37 by Tommy Casanova, and number 21 by Jerry Stovall has been retired, but those numbers are still available for players. It kind of bothers me when I see mediocre players wearing those numbers, but Dan Bornay, nobody will ever wear 20.
No, no one will ever wear 20, and we've retired some basketball numbers as well, both women's and men's basketball, a couple of baseball jerseys as well. So, you know, we're not quite like the Yankees where you just about run out of numbers because you retired so many jerseys. But it's good to do that. It's good to remember the greats. And certainly in football, in terms of, national recognition, Cannon, Billy Cannon, Jerry Stovall, Tommy Casanova. And I have a feeling down the road the university might be looking at honoring maybe one or more linemen in that category. I don't know exactly where that stands, but there are probably some fellows out there who might merit that kind of recognition.
Where were you on Halloween night in 1959?
I was at a party in Thibodaux, a Halloween party. I was with friends at the house of one of our classmates, Carolyn Moore, and that's where we heard the call of the run, okay? And I was on my way home. My dad came to pick me up, and I was on my way home, and that's where we heard on the radio the goal line stand, the great stand in the south end zone that really won the game. I mean, Billy's run, of course, is iconic, and you can never ever top it. But, boy, that goal line stand at the very end of the game with a third-string quarterback in, Doug Elmore for Ole Miss, where we shut Ole Miss down and won the game. It was that was the pivotal play of the pivotal game, certainly. Had we not stopped that fourth down run, we would not have won the game. So, hey, and Cannon was in on the stop along with Warren Rapp.
And Warren Rapp gave a beautiful eulogy for Billy Cannon last Wednesday. 877-217-5757 for Dan Bornay, Ali Baltazar, and Becca Dill producing, and this is Talk Louisiana, and we go to Dan downtown. Dan, you're on with Dan Bornay.
Yeah, Mr. Bornay, this brings back memories with Everybody's All-American. I was in my office on the second floor of the Fieldstone House on the corner of Government and St. Ferdinand, watching them filming the scenes that were done in the Frost Stop. It's a fight scene, I believe it was, because they had it all blocked off. You couldn't see what was going on inside until I saw the movie later. But it was quite a memory seeing all that going on downtown here.
Yeah, the Frost Top, by the way, according to the owner, Imad Nofal, has been used for four different films. And it is also a place where Donald Trump, the president, when he was running for office, wanted to eat because he had apparently eaten there when he was here for the Miss USA pageant. He loved the food at Frost Top, Dan Bornay.
That's good. You know, it brings back a memory. There was a race in Everybody's All-American. There was a sprint between Quaid and, I forgot the name of the character in the play. But anyway, it's one of these things, who can run fastest? And I think it was supposedly run in the bottoms, and it's interesting as I read about Darius Geis, the area in which he grew up is, as I understand it, he and Baton Rouge called the Bottoms.
Yes.
And so that might be an interesting bit of trivia. Right. I may get the DVR of that movie and play that back and see really what they called it in the show itself. So.
Well, and Darius would not have been alive, to put it in perspective, at the time that Dennis Quaid was running. Angela at LSU. Angela, you're on with Dan Bornay.
Hi. Mr. Dan, first of all, I know your son Dave. He sings with my cousin Rhett. He's a wonderful musician.
Oh. Well, your cousin Rhett is a wonderful musician, too. Again, he's great having Rhett back in Louisiana.
Yes, it is. Yesterday was my birthday, and he sang for me at the Jambalaya Festival.
Well, happy birthday to you.
Well, thank you. It's just funny, everything on the show today. I did want to say we love you. All five of my children
thank
have
you.
Been in Tiger Band. And whenever I showed them that Everybody's All-American, I was actually in the movie, too, in the stands. Me and my roommate had dressed up in the old-fashioned clothes, and they showed us in the movie. So I showed my kids, look at that sign. I'm holding that. And they were so excited. They loved the movie because they were in the band. And I am a teacher, so it's like, thanks for doing all the teacher stuff that you do.
All right. Well, thank you, Angela. And it is fun when people are immortalized on film by virtue of having been in one, and Dan is one of those along with Angela. And a few years ago, Dan, you and I were in Columbia to honor John McKithen at a local theater there, beautiful place, in a town which, by the way, has a population of about 300 people. And it produced Governor, Secretary of State, Neil Reisers from Columbia, a lot of important people. Buddy Caldwell is also from Columbia. But Gus Weil was there that night, and Gus was Governor McKithen's chief assistant in his first term and was his political consultant when he got elected. And Gus, who died on April 13th, remembered Big John.
McKithen was what you
yes,
would call a practical man. And I just, as I say, I came here to deliver his eulogy. And even in heaven, he played a trick on me. I want to tell you what it was. He had bought, after he left the governor's office, a beautiful white suit, like a southern planter. And he and I talked about that suit almost every day. He said, I'm going to leave you that suit, so you look prominent. I said, well, I appreciate it. And I get to the funeral, and I walk over to his casket, and there's John McKithen in my suit.
That's great.
That's great. I thought he's honored me by naming me to give his eulogy. But I followed Reverend T.J. Jemison, an African-American from Baton Rouge, who also gave the eulogy. So McKithen was playing jokes on me all the time, every minute. I want to tell you, men like him come along so seldom. How this red clay, how this soil, how these piney woods produced this man will always be a mystery. Is there another one among you? I don't know. In my lifetime, there's been one John Julian McKithen, and not a day goes by that I don't thank the Almighty God that I got to know him and to serve him. I thank you.
And we'll hear from Dan Bornay about John McKithen, born 100 years ago today in Columbia. And we'll also reflect on the legacy, complex one, of P.G.T. Beauregard, born 200 years ago today in New Orleans. After this time out on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thanks for joining us for Talk Louisiana on Memorial Day. Hope you're enjoying your day off. And if you're working, then more power to you. That's a great thing. That's beautiful thing about our country is that some people work on holidays. 877-217-5757. Dan Bornay is with us for our final segment, and we're reflecting on two of the most prominent Louisianians of all time, John McKithen, who was the first two-term consecutive governor in Louisiana in the 20th century, serving between the terms of Jimmy Davis and the beginning of the era of Edwin Washington Edwards. And he was a man who was not expected to win in 1964, but he upset Chep Morrison, beat him to get the Democratic nomination for governor, and then going away in what was essentially a one-party state at that time. And Dan, you worked with the Louisiana chemical industry as the head honcho for many years, and John McKithen certainly had a major impact on that industry.
Well, he really did, Jim. In fact, I covered McKithen as a newsman back in the late 60s when I worked for Channel 9 before I went into government for 2 years. I covered the Capitol and other things as well. But he really was the jump-starter for a huge amount of petrochemical investment in Louisiana during his two terms. He coined the phrase the right to profit state, and he had the legislature enact several major economic development laws to help lure foreign investment and much domestic investment to Louisiana. And during that period of time, in 1964 to say 70, that period of time, the amount of investment that came to Louisiana in today's dollars is about $24 billion in today's dollars. That's a tremendous amount of investment. He wanted to lure investors from the Far East and from Europe to the U.S. and to Louisiana, and he did. He took trips there personally as an ambassador. Took trips there in order to bring industry to Louisiana. So he's one of the real heroes of industrial inducement in Louisiana history. And of course, on that basic infrastructure has now been built an even greater amount of investment. And even more on top of that because of cheap natural gas. So a lot of that points right back to the McKithen era and his forethought and his vision of what could be done with the Mississippi River and with the Calcasieu Basin.
And as we know, he was obsessed with LSU football.
Well, he loved LSU football, and he was eventually appointed to the LSU Board of Supervisors by Dave Treen. He used to go out and watch LSU practice. And who knows, he may have thrown in a play every now and then. But he was a tremendous advocate for the university, loved it, and served, I think, 3 or 4 years on the LSU board and then resigned. I think he said he was kind of exhausted and had other things he needed to do, and so he stepped down from the board.
Well, actually, he said that he was resigning because, in his view, a secret cabal was running the university. He was not happy on that board, and he got Walker Percy to resign with him, by the way. But John McKithen loved Louisiana State University. He loved the state, and he is his biggest accomplishment, according to many, is the construction of the Louisiana Superdome. But also in 1966 at the AFL-CIO convention in Baton Rouge, he pointed to some black people in the audience and said, "I know I'm not leaving this state, and I don't think you're leaving either, so we've got to solve our problem," and giving the power of the state governor to solving racial differences made a big difference. And in 1966, that was an extremely progressive move by Governor John J. McKithen, who was from Columbia, and had campaigned for Governor Dan as a segregationist. He became anything but a segregationist.
He moved way to the middle and did so at the right time. He was the bridge governorship between the segregationist South and the modern era in Louisiana politics as envisioned by Edwin Edwards. John McKithen was that bridge. He gradually brought us out of that segregation era into a new era, and we still had a long way to go, but Governor McKithen appointed Jesse Stone, for example, to a position of influence, and he eventually became president of Southern University. He appointed Israel Augustine and Dutch Morial to judgeships in New Orleans, and we know that Dutch became the first African-American mayor of New Orleans. It paved the way for Edwards to come in and to really open up state government to African-Americans. That was a super accomplishment of the McKithen years, and there's a book being written on that. Reverend Nash, our buddy, is writing the book on McKithen. And that book came out of that discussion that we had in Columbia several years ago, where I think we all agreed it's the one book on Louisiana history that needs to be written on the McKithen 8 years.
I'm with you on that. And when John McKithen was born 100 years ago today in Columbia, it was the 100th anniversary of the birth of P.G.T. Beauregard. May 28, 1818 to February 20, 1893, Beauregard died a few months before the birth of one Huey Pierce Long. He was known as the Little Frenchman, Little Napoleon, Little Creole, the hero of Fort Sumter. And he was born in New Orleans. He died born in St. Bernard Parish, actually died in New Orleans, buried at the tomb of the Army of Tennessee Metairie Cemetery, New Orleans. And he was a man who was considered to be a war hero, more than one war, by the way. But his statue was taken down, and many who supported Mitch Landrieu on the other statues opposed him on taking down Beauregard, including Walter Isaacson. Beauregard, Dan, you being the student of history that you are, a very complex legacy.
Well, most of those guys have complex legacies. You know, we tend to forget about them after the war, but he was in the in the United States Army for many years, 20 some odd years before the Civil War, and as you say, fought in many campaigns for the United States of America. I think even after the war, he was offered command positions in foreign armies, and said something to the effect that he'd rather be poor and live in America than reap the riches in some foreign country. So he certainly did have a heart for the United States. So many of those guys had checkered careers after the war, and Beauregard was one of those.
And at the end, he broke ranks with the Confederate leadership, but he was certainly tied to the wrong side of history in that war, and now his statue, which for those of us who grew up in New Orleans was a big part of our youth, is no longer, and Beauregard is considered to be, in many quarters, to be a despicable figure. Some still regard him as a hero, but there's still a building, a dormitory at LSU named in his honor, Dan Bornay. Do you think there'll be a move to take his name off that dormitory?
That's a good question. I don't know, Jim. I know there's one down at Nichols named after Beauregard as well. One of their classroom buildings there named after Beauregard. I don't know whether the changing of names thing has had its season or not, you know. These things tend to come in waves. There's, you know, seasons in a different term, but I don't know whether that would be revisited with respect to LSU or not.
But what an irony that Beauregard and McKithen have the same birthday, exactly 100 years apart, and we're talking about, if we were to list the 20 most prominent Louisianians of all time, they both might be on the list.
Well, I think so, and that's a great irony and a great coincidence. 100 years apart. Wow.
When you were growing up as a young man in South Louisiana, I'm sure we're educated about Beauregard. There's a parish named after him in western Louisiana. There's a neighborhood named in his honor here in Baton Rouge. I think a former U.S. Army base and National Guard camp near Pineville. His name's all over Louisiana.
It is everywhere. You're right. And I would imagine a lot of folk now don't really know the history behind that name at all. When you think of the hundreds of thousands of Louisianans who have been educated since the 1950s or 60s, unsure how many would connect Beauregard Town with PGT Beauregard. that would be a really, really interesting trivia question to ask on one of these Louisiana surveys.
There you go. Well, unfortunately, a lot of us, and I include myself in that number on occasion, we're not as appreciative and as knowledgeable about historical figures as we should be. Here's kind of a funny question to close with you, Dan. Holly in the Garden District says, is it Beauregard or Beauregard?
Well, you know, I guess Beauregard would be, if you want to emphasize the beau in terms of how the French would say it, I'd say Beauregard. By the way, Nichols itself is named after a Civil War general, my alma mater. Interestingly enough, it just comes to mind, who lost an arm and a leg in the Civil War and ran for governor and was elected.
That's
and,
right.
I think he is the one
Nichols.
I think he's the one who abolished the Louisiana lottery. So there you go.
And Kirby Smith, the hall at LSU where I lived for a couple of years, it was named after the last surviving full general of the Confederacy that's soon to be destroyed. But Obviously, the Confederacy still has a mark at LSU, which was founded by William Tecumseh Sherman, the man who won it for the other side. And Dan Bornack.
That's exactly right.
We got to roll.
Exactly
thanks,
right.
Thanks, my friend.
No, well, thanks to you, Jim. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Back tomorrow. Stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.